I'm presenting on a CBPR study that utilized ethnographic methods, and we were assessing a rural community. And the goal of this project is to design a substance use prevention program for youth in this rural county. I have to acknowledge my team of researchers. We are really a cross-institution and interprofessional group. Nisha is in the School of Architecture at UVA. Peggy is a human development expert and psychology at Virginia Tech. Ivy Hinton is a psychologist at the University of Virginia. Donna is a DNP clinician interested in respiratory illnesses and cancer and from Carilion Clinic. Nancy Anderson has been our consultant from UCLA. She is a nurse anthropologist. And Esther Thatcher recently joined the group as our graduate assistant and doctoral student at UVA. I have no relationships to disclose, and this project was funded by the Virginia Healthy Youth Foundation, which was formerly the Virginia Tobacco Settlement Foundation. They have renamed themselves and devoted probably $1 million of the funds that were for tobacco to obesity prevention, so our monies are dwindling. This study actually has four aims, and it is a three-year study. And what I'll be reporting to you on is the work that we're doing in Aim 2, which is looking at the community assessment of this rural county with what we're calling a community participatory research team to identify the factors within the county, the ecological, cultural, contextual factors that might influence how the youth in that county remain substance-free or use substances so that we can better design with this county a substance use prevention program. Aims for year two and three are actually to involve the CPRT in developing that intervention and then pilot testing it. Many of you are, I know, are familiar, especially after our opening sessions, with the problems of tobacco, alcohol, and drugs. Obviously, these are risk behaviors in our youth and within our society. Healthy People 2010 has some objectives that are proposed and will be released, I guess, in December about wanting to increase the proportion of youths, their attitudes to be disapproving of substance use, reduce the tobacco use, and increase the age and proportion of those who remain alcohol and drug free. 20% of high school males, 19% of females report current smoking, that is within the past 30 days. 15% of males and 14% of males reported current use of smokeless tobacco. And then 14% of high school students smoke the little cigars and cigarettes and biddies, and I think we probably could add the hookah and many other forms of tobacco that, our youth are being exposed to. The next bullet is data that comes from the monitoring the future data set, and kids in 8th, 10th, or 12th grades living in non-metropolitan statistical areas, which this rural area is, have higher rates of daily use of cigarettes, smokeless tobacco, and binge drinking, as well as higher use of narcotics and other drugs. These are the methods that we are applying in this community participatory project. We're actually excited to think about, and this paper is really about the methods and the progress that we're making using these methods. So it's participatory in the sense that we have done two prior studies in this county, and we worked with them on focus on tobacco prevention and looking at non-smoking youths to try to identify protective factors. In the group interviews and individual interviews that we did with the youth and their parents, what emerged was a real concern, not just about tobacco, but also about alcohol and other drug use in the county. So we really feel that we're on that end of the spectrum that's much closer to a pure, true CBPR than we are to an investigator-driven intervention, because the desire for this project kind of emerged out of earlier work that we did with the county. And we are including youth, parents, and community leaders on our advisory, our CBPR team. We're using ethnographic approaches combined with our own nursing community assessment approaches, really trying to get at the culture, the values, the beliefs of the people in this county so that they can kind of identify those, understand those, explore those, make them explicit, and then think about a foundation for substance use prevention into the future. We're using GIS in our collection of data to map and demonstrate it back to the CPRT, and we're also going to use it analytically as we progress in the study. And we're also using PhotoVoice. We've done a lot of windshield surveys and taken a lot of pictures of the county, and we're having the CPRT take pictures of the county so that we really get a sense of their understanding of their own community, their own culture, and the foundation that we have to build upon. This is another iteration of the model, and this is an evolving model. We adapted some of this from Aronson and colleagues in 2007, and they present a more ethnographic framework. We're also looking at some of the classic public health nursing frameworks, Anderson and McFarlane and others, to look at the community domains and the areas that we're doing, building our assessment. But clearly you can see from the assessment domains down through the ethnographically informed information and mapping, we're working with the community ultimately to design this rural prevention program for youth. We are interviewing community leaders individually, 15 to 20 leaders in the community, and we plan to have future groups of parents and youth that we will also interview about their belief structures and values, et cetera, within this community. These are some of the items that we've looked at and categorized in terms of the community assessment domains, and I don't think any of these are new to you. We've tried to frame them as they relate to substance use, abuse, prevention, and clearly that's sort of the work that we're doing in terms of developing interview questions evolved from these domains and these items. We actually have developed interview questions with our CPRT, so we worked with them to create the interview. This slide gets into some of the procedures. So we're talking about the methods that we're using and the procedures. This is a community study. One of the biggest hurdles was the IRB approval. And educating our, I think we all, those of us involved with CBRP, have to educate our IRBs more and more about what community-based participatory research really is. We had multiple submissions. We were really challenged to clarify over and over what our intent was. Although we are not interviewing any of the youth on our advisory team, our CPRT, or the youth that we plan to interview in the community about their own behaviors, we're really interviewing them about their perception and belief about the values and behaviors of the collective in the community. We were encouraged to go ahead and seek a certificate of confidentiality in the event that there was any disclosure of information. So we have done all that, and we're obtaining our IRB approvals in phases or stages. We have had one or two modifications already to move to interviewing community leaders. We'll have future modifications when we do the youth and parent interviews, and we've gotten our year two continuation, which is a very positive thing. This is an example of our recruitment goal. The goal for the CPRT, this advisory team, is to have 20 people from the community. I will tell you that we've had about 8 community meetings monthly. We go down there monthly and meet in a local restaurant. We eat, and then we have an hour and a half meeting after that. And our meetings have ranged with a group size from 11 at the lowest to 16 at the highest. And I really do think we have a strong core of people who have come back and attended 3 or 4 of those meetings. So one of the good things about this is that we have a local recruiter from the Virginia Cooperative Extension Agency. They're affiliated with Virginia Tech. They're similar to the 4-H clubs I think we thought of years ago, but these extension agents know their communities really well and are well known in those communities. And she worked with us over the past 2 studies, so has continued to work with us to help us recruit for this population. This is giving you an overview of the goal. Over the 3 years of the study, these are the numbers that we would like to interview. We want to have a goal of 20 on our CPRT, but we want to do group interviews with youth and group interviews with parents, and then individual interviews with 15 to 20 community leaders. Some of the challenges that we're dealing with. The first challenge was that the adults on our IRB, on our CPRT, needed to take IRB training. We actually wanted all of the members of the CPRT to take IRB training, but Virginia Tech dissuaded us from having the adolescents do the training for a series of complex reasons. But we've had to help the members of the community. Some people were able fairly easily to get on to the internet and then look at our IRB modules. Others are not as internet savvy and not as skilled, so we actually spend time going down there with the training modules, with information in hand, and really walk them through. We didn't answer questions for them, but we helped them through the procedures for the internet IRB training, which CT training is not easy. All of us know the complexity of that. So. And it's been a barrier, in a sense. CoLab, we have a platform that is a collaborative platform. You might have WebCat, or you might have Blackboard. The University of Virginia now has CoLab. And we had initially hoped that we can put our CPRT members in as guests, and they could log in. Well, there were just one or two or three too many steps for the community members to actually be able to do that. So, well-laid plans. But what they've advised us is that text us, put it on Facebook, email us. So we have actually used these other mechanisms that have been recommended by the CPRT to communicate with them, to have regular communication. And an exciting thing that happened at the end of our first year's work, our nurse consultant came from California, and she spent a day debriefing with us about the progress of the study, which she had read about and read our minutes. Then she came down to the county with us and participated in the CPRT meeting. And then we had a debriefing session with her, and she brought back her observations about how we were functioning with the CPRT and had many recommendations about how we needed to turn over the leadership in ways that we hadn't conceived of yet to the members of the CPRT. I mean, we want this to be their project, and so we are working very hard to turn that leadership over to them, and they're accepting it. It's really quite exciting. So we did orientation to the group process. We did a lot of kind of group cohesiveness activities. We did review the rules for protection of human subjects for the youth that are on the CPRT. We reviewed it for all the CPRT members, but for those youth that are involved in the CPRT who hadn't done any of the training. We have used nominal group process. So we divide our 16-member CPRT into three groups or four groups, and any next step in the project, and for example, the community assessment questions, we had come up with just a bare bones set of questions that we gave to them. And then we had each group work on two domains. So every domain had at least two groups cover this information. So it's an iterative process where everybody got to write down what they thought about the questions, edit them, yes, no, and then everybody got to contribute and be heard to make a statement. And then we worked collaboratively within the small groups. And then we brought the information back to the larger group, and ultimately at a later meeting we voted. And so the questions really have been designed and emerged from the group activity. Our logo was actually created by one of the youth on the project, and he found clip art and came up with the title Knockout Tobacco. We had a few other competing logos and titles, but this is the one that the CPRT voted on. So Knockout Tobacco will be the name of our project. So our community leader interviews are now progressing. The CPRT has identified almost 30 people in their community, from the sheriff to the librarian to the counselor in the high school, and we are doing individual interviews with those questions. And we have teams of CPRT members and investigators doing the community leader interviews. And we will analyze the transcripts of those interviews in a rigorous qualitative, using a rigorous qualitative methodology. This is an example of how we're beginning to use GIS. And Esther Thatcher, our graduate student, is learning GIS and taking a course at UVA right now and is helping us with this. But we worked with the CPRT on some of the photos and community assessment activities, and they identified places in the county where some of the youth might have jobs, where youth might congregate, where the shopping malls were, and then we would validate this. We brought these maps back to them. We're really trying to identify the areas in the county where the youth will congregate and where substance use might be occurring and other kinds of issues like that. So this is another just graphic about the validation and review cycle. So we've done mapping with the CPRT. We do GIS mapping, and then we bring the maps back to them, and we get validation, and we move things around and add things. So it's a discussion and revision, and we're going to add census data. We have other maps that talk about the demographics and where the youth are in this very rural county. So the interdisciplinary investigators have done windchill surveys. I had graduate students who did a wonderful comprehensive community assessment. And we presented that to the CPRT, and then obviously the GIS mapping production. But then the local knowledge that we're trying to obtain from the community is gained through these community leader interviews, through pictures. We now have three teams, a youth, a parent, and a community leader, going out and taking photos of their community to try to add to the data that we have and identify the areas that we should focus on, where the kids congregate and smoke after school, where they might be buying marijuana, anything that they think is important, the churches, which might be protective factors. So our analysis will utilize GIS software. We will do qualitative analysis and descriptive multivariate statistics with the youth risk behavior survey. When we get into the phase of doing group interviews with youth in the county, we're going to use the YRBS in a very anonymous fashion, but we'll aggregate that information, and then we'll do some descriptive statistics with that in the end. So the goal is collaboration, and I would have to say that it has been time-consuming. It takes a lot of skills, and maybe one of the biggest skills is the ability to listen and to let go. It's a messy process. It's a process that moves back and forth. It has a real personality has emerged in this county. Unfortunately, there's a Virginia Tech flag there and no UVA flag. a lot of Virginia Tech fans. So we are continuing this cycle of review and validation. But we're getting some really good data. I think we really are tapping local knowledge of these community members who really are vested in the interest of protecting their kids from substances and designing a prevention program for the future that they might be able to sustain. Thank you.
Thank you to all of our presenters. We now have about 15 minutes left that you can direct questions to any of our panel. Go ahead. If you could stand and speak loudly so everyone can hear your question, please.
Okay.
Of
what those were.
Sure.
I don't know if you can hear me from here. Can everybody hear me from here?
No.
All right. First question was, can we differentiate what was actually going on in the intervention visit, right? Yes and no, potentially. We have data on at least referral patterns, which we could go back and take a look at. And you specifically asked about women with a history of depression and those without a history of depression, right? Okay, yeah.
In terms of, do you know what the nurses did?
We know about referrals. And we do have copious nurses' notes, but in terms of, you know, quantifying those and coding those, we haven't done that beyond the referrals. I will say that we're about to send a paper out for publication on some of the main findings, and one of the questions that we did ask there was, and it's an indicator of referral pattern, was if you were a higher risk person for depression, did the odds ratio of getting into a clinic appointment for that increase? And it did. And so we looked at, you know, everyone, and then we looked at subgroups who screened positive, and then we looked at subgroups with a history of depression. And so that was an indicator to us that there were appropriate referrals in getting people into the system. So those are the main things that we can look at in that. And then the second question had to do with chronic health conditions. One of the things that I don't think came out here was it was a requirement, it was an inclusion criteria, that you had to have at least one chronic health condition to get into the study. And those were largely defined by generally what we might consider medical conditions that could interfere with functional status. So domestic violence would not have been a chronic health condition per se, although we did do interventions for those kinds of issues. But the thrust of the study was really looking at how health precludes women from successfully transitioning from welfare and into work. So we didn't necessarily look at that. I have a scratched out in pencil list of what those chronic health conditions were, and I think number one on the list was headaches, very generically. I want to say number two was back pain, and followed thereafter by depression and some other things. So does that answer your question?
We are. We pay them $20 for coming to meetings, and that was built into the grant, obviously, and we feed them at each of the events that we have. And I've given them the people who are taking photos for us of the community. We bought very small digital cameras, and we've given them those cameras to take pictures for us, and then they'll be able to keep those as an incentive in participating in the activity. We actually have one of the youth on the CPRT. We were looking for leaders for the next meeting, and someone said it would be a resume builder. You know, he said, "Oh, I want to go to Vanderbilt." So yes, I'll do it. You know, so the money is getting them there. But I think that there's a real engagement between the kids and the parents and the leaders that we've have in this group. They want to be there, and they're happy to get the money, but I think they have a personal incentive to do this in different respects. Yeah. Right. Right.
Is that when you report on the numbers of people you want to interview from different groups? You specifically tell you who are users and who are not, so how would you know that?
Oh, the question is, because I've indicated that we have youth who are non-users and youth who may have used, and how would I know? Well, on the CPRT, we wanted a mix of youth who are users and non-users. So what we had to do was to first get an IRB get a minor assent and a parental consent to fill out a screening form. So we did have a screening form for each of the youth to participate in the CPRT that went over some of the high-risk behaviors. And then what we look at that, and then we've identified that we have kids who are in the non-using category and kids who've used alcohol or marijuana. And so it's sort of broken out pretty evenly. And then, but we discard that information and we don't identify them in any way. Nobody sees that except perhaps me, but then the information is just shredded and we don't keep that information. As we move on and we do the study with the interviews of the youth in groups, we will also get some anonymous data about their behaviors, but we haven't gotten IRB approval for that phase yet. But it was, Virginia Tech was more stringent even than UVA, requiring us to do this permission to get the screening tool before we get permission to participate on the CPRT. So we've had to go through these multiple steps and stages. Yeah.
Other question?
Okay.
I have a question.
All right. Do you want to use?
Are you familiar with Lee Smith Battle's work about public health nursing and responsive use of cells?
Can you all hear?
My question is just whether or not you had come across Lee Smith Battle's earlier work, and it's in the late 80s, and then she's continued to write about it, mm-hmm. but about home visiting experiences, and a lot of it is from a qualitative methodological perspective, but I think you might get some rich insights from that, and one of her papers is about responsive use of self, and that's what the public health nurse brings.
Not specifically that paper, but I'm generally aware of that work, and that's something I want to follow up on. I'm not sure we have any data to be able to really integrate it into, but for future studies,
I have a question. Could you tell me again, I couldn't hear whose paper you were talking about as far as home visiting, and also...
What I just mentioned?
And also I wanted to find out about your grant that you used. What was the name of that?
Okay, the paper... The paper that I mentioned was Lee Smith Battle, Smith-Battle, and it was called The Responsive Use of Self, and it was published in Advances in Nursing Science, I think in the late 80s. I mean, it's a wonderful paper where they did a qualitative study of expert public health nurses, kind of followed Benner's model, and I think that there's probably some rich data because she's continued with her research to this day and is presenting a lot of information about it. And then your other question was about the funding source? Yes, for us it is the Virginia Healthy Youth Foundation, which was formerly the Virginia Tobacco Settlement Foundation. And they've changed their name to Virginia Healthy Youth because they've integrated a mandate from the legislature to look at obesity and use some of the, which I think is an important issue, but clearly tobacco use in counties like these that still grow tobacco is extremely important, and the money is just being siphoned off. We're getting.
Time if there's one more question. Anyone? If not, I'd like to thank you all again for presenting. And, oh, okay, you're welcome.